And we are all exhausted. We can say, but there's the further matter of how far we will get today, tonight, and tomorrow. We may wish to apply our minds to that too. May I just add my voice to the request for a clean version? In fact, I wrote to you, sir, a little while ago, suggesting that such a thing would be a good idea. And for the general dissemination, general understanding of the progress achieved, because I think we have pretty much created a new law. But it will be very important when we do the new draft for the general dissemination to indicate where we have simply not concluded work or agreement, because there are some provisions which we have long since agreed to change, that they have simply not been rewritten. So it will be important to indicate which those are and to indicate the areas where we are still talking. Otherwise, people have the impression that we are saying we've made progress, but it is not in fact so. So may I just support Llewellyn in his request for a clean copy. And then perhaps Karen and Cesar ought to be given enough time to produce this thing. Certainly Monday and Tuesday will assist them. But may I ask again about today, tonight, and tomorrow? How far are you intending to go?
Honourable members, today I think is written. It is sealed. My hands are tied, so today is the usual. Tomorrow I will hear you on tomorrow. Today we are unfortunately going to have to do the hours. We can do the dinner early so that we don't come back after dinner. In which case we can do dinner at 7 and then we don't come back after that. It's like the secretary then to notify the kitchen and the lounge that we will be expecting to eat at 7. No objection to that, then that instruction will go to. The issue of tomorrow, I'd like to hear you. Why don't you want this tomorrow? You want to extend that weekend to an extra long one?
It's not so that we will be extending it. Mr. Mania, having so recently addressed the United Kingdom military, needs to address tomorrow the United States Army. From 9:30 to something, I forget the hours, but he wouldn't be able to start till 10 in any case. There is another thinking to do and a consultation between colleagues necessary. And as things stand, the only opportunity we have to do that is in these lunch breaks and as we sit here and so forth. So, I mean, there is time needed for that as well.
Which I thought was this long weekend that you were trying to extract out of me. Honourable Landers,
the long weekend is not for consulting, it's for rest. Chairperson, tomorrow, Fridays are an awkward day. All our members will need to take flights. And it's logistical considerations that we would ask that we stop at midday tomorrow.
The proposal from your colleagues across the floor was that we don't sit at all, if I understood them correct. Yes, this is what...
The issue is the fact that Mr. Maynard won't be able to be until 10, which means we would only have 1 or 2 hours, and therefore, should we not rather postpone the meeting tomorrow? And it's literally 2 hours that we would lose. And I would suggest we'd be able to catch that up. We've made tremendous progress. As has been laboriously stated, we are all quite tired, and from my side, I just want to also echo that I reached the stage of irritability this morning, which is not in my nature, for which I did apologize. But I do think that we've made a lot of progress, and I would suggest that we call it a day tomorrow as well. You also gave an indication to speak in the corridors. That can also be done. But the formal side of things, let's see, we've got a good... another 4 hours now, and then we can give the law advisors work to do and come back on Wednesday afternoon when we're refreshed, not irritable, more agreeable, and reach consensus. Thank you, Jack.
Some of the last issues are so difficult we won't reach them by Wednesday.
Honourable, you are the last speaker on this.
Chair, I just think it's important. There are three reasons why we need to, in my view, break until Wednesday. The first is so that a consolidated bill can be prepared. The second is so that parties can consult amongst themselves. And the third reason is for, to the extent that it's possible for parties to consult with each other. This will give us at least a little bit of time to do so before Wednesday, late Wednesday afternoon.
Honourable members, you are asking me to search very deep down inside to see whether I am as kind as what you are pretending me to be.
The chairman, on a point of order.
I didn't recognize you, sir.
I'm raising a point of order.
Yes, fine. Is the point of order on his point of order?
Yes. The order comes before his. Or is he raising a point of order on my point of
yes,
order?
Yes, it is.
It's a point of order on your point of order. Chairperson, when the chair is speaking, you can't raise a point of order. You can raise the point of order when the chair has completed what he is saying.
How can we debate his point of order? That's not correct. If there is a fire in the house...
You can speak when I'm finished, because I'm going to rule now.
On his point of order or the one that I haven't raised yet?
You can take me on a review if you wish. The issue regarding the work tomorrow...
So I'm not giving my point of order. Fine.
I will hear you when you can review my decision. I shall act as the reviewing party if you... Honourable members, for fear that I might be labelled a slave driver and bordering on unfair labour practices here, I would not want to attract additional bad names for myself. I have, over the period of time in the media, been said to be many things. I hope the media will be lenient with me this time. The Friday argument is a good one. And so I shall say there shall be no meeting tomorrow. Because it is a few hours. And if we are going to consider the availability of Ms. the Honourable Mania as a key issue in whether we should proceed or not, I think the fact that he's going to come here at 10, finish his coffee at 10:30, and perhaps that would be inappropriate. So there will be no meeting tomorrow. The question on Monday, I seem to be unfortunately outvoted on this one. Because on the Friday one there was not full agreement. I could have capitalized on that particular issue, but on the Monday issue, I've got no support for insisting that the meeting goes ahead. And the last thing I would want is a lot of disgruntled members of Parliament walking in here on Monday and then proceeding as if they were on strike. So, regarding the Monday thing, there shall not be a meeting on Monday then. But I remind you of some of the other issues that you have agreed to. You have agreed to work late. You seek only the time in order to recuperate, and I think the time that you're going to get and the food and the drinks you're going to take are going to do the necessary, and when you come back, you should be in the state, it would at least keep you going for another month or so. So, honourable members, I would expect your cooperation because I will not be available on Friday of next week. The Judicial Service Commission is sitting. And so that means we only have 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday. I take it that justice will not interfere then with my sitting on Thursday, which will be the whole day. And Wednesday, then, we will proceed after justice is set in the afternoon. That then will be the sole meetings that we will have next week. I also remind you that the Honourable Mania was arguing very strongly for space in order to consult and in order to exchange documents. And I would not like to find out that those things, in fact, did not take place, based on the fact that I've given you the space now in order for those things to happen. So those people that have documents, will you please arrange with one another, give your email addresses, and have those consultations that you say you want to have, so that when we get you on Wednesday, there's not going to be a further request for space to do those things that you said you were going to do in the time that you are now going to get off. As to the state law advisor, there is a request for a consolidated document. I take it you understand what it is there now. will you please let the secretary get that document and possibly myself so that we can make sure that that document is distributed in good time. We would not want that document to be distributed on Tuesday because it would serve no purpose. So there's no sitting tomorrow. And you've got all the opportunities now to prepare that document and by tomorrow afternoon perhaps to make that document available so that there's going to be no excuse for these honourable members to come and say that the document was not distributed in time. Honourable members, does that reflect what has taken place here now? Honourable Abosini, on your point of order, can I hear you now? Do you still want to be heard?
So let's move on.
Honourable members, when we adjourned, we were in the vicinity of hostile activities. If you can just remind me of the page. This is the other chap, isn't it? The proposal that we were looking at is this is the other chap, the character that we were worried about. The receiving end, because our espionage was only dealing with the carrier and not with the receiver, and we asked that the receiver also be punished. And it cannot be the case, I would imagine, that the receiver gets less time than the carrier. They would both be equally guilty if they were caught red-handed. And one would imagine that they would both serve the same sentence. Because I see on page 62 that the years are crossed out, obviously leaving that for the committee to decide. So the first thing, honourable members, is this what we asked for? Because this was the request from the honourable Landers. Honourable Landers?
Chairperson, yes, this is what we asked for. And just to reiterate, for the sake of the record, it is inconceivable that it can be a crime to unlawfully and intentionally communicate, deliver, or make available state information that's classified top secret to someone, and that someone is, for no obvious reason, not guilty also on the offense.
Is there any opposition to that proposal? Yes or no, both?
So let me say clearly that we are opposed to the provision, which is wide open to abuse, along the lines that Mr. Mania has already sketched to you, and we hope you will, in the fullness of time, reconsider. In the meantime, may I just draw to your attention, from the Canadian Security of Information Act, Section 4, sub 3, for at least your consideration. Every person who receives any secret official code word, password, blah, 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 is guilty of an offence under this Act unless he proves that the communication to him of the code word, etc., was contrary to his desire. If you in time persist in wanting to create an offence here, I think that you must introduce defenses and safeguards in order to avoid really awful consequences. There is this Canadian precedent, but please read it in the full context of the Canadian, which deals in the first place with security personnel. It is true that it also deals with other persons, but it deals and is written for security and intelligence personnel. Such a person should at least be in a position to show that it was contrary to his desire. He's the person with a briefcase into whose possession the thing is slipped, as per the example given.
Honourable Mania.
Chair, again, I mean, an alternative is again to look at the mischief, and the concern here is that we want to criminalise receiving. The question is, who receives? And our concern is, in the first instance, a foreign agent or a person acting for a foreign agent, particularly, or foreign agency. Now, if that is what we are trying to, if that is the mischief we are trying to criminalise, then I think, subject to what the Honourable Smutzer said, then let's specify that in the bill. Because that is not what the bill says, or that is not what the draft says. The draft says something quite different, and it would seem to me that if a person receives a document which may benefit another state, has no intention of giving it to that state, that person could still then be charged with espionage. I just think that there's a way to tighten this up, and we ought to do it.
Honourable Abraham Seed. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the receiving end, I think what would be important is to carry, as the Honourable Smith was suggesting, with irrespective of the language, whether it's the Canadian or other language, carrying the notion that the receipt must be with intention of bringing about the results provided for in the offense. In the case of espionage, of that of benefiting the foreign state, in case of hostile activity, that of committing, aiding, or abetting hostile activity. That's very important. Just incidentally, during the break, we had a discussion, and I'm sorry the Honourable Mentor is not here, on who can be on the receiving end. And we as members of Parliament can very well be on the receiving end. I mean, it's not uncommon that somebody gives us classified documentation. We were recollecting a colleague of ours who went to a committee with classified information purportedly to disclose malfeasance in ESCOM. I mean, what happens if we get a document that is purported to reveal malfeasance in an organ of state, and then it turns out that it doesn't? Now, we receive it, we think we can use it because it shouldn't be classified, because it covers corruption, and it turns out that it doesn't, and we find ourselves in that situation. So there must be a specific intent. We may take the risk of participating in disclosure, let me step back. The receipt of documents without specific intent is already covered in the provision dealing with disclosure. So to cover here, there must be the indication of specific intent as well. Receiving with intent of bringing about those results, benefiting a state, the state of bringing about an action of hostile activity. Honourable Anders.
Chairperson, firstly, you already have a provision in the bill that deals with that situation. Clause 18 says, if you come into possession of a classified record, if you come into possession of a classified record, you must return it to the relevant authorities. It's very simple. There's nothing confusing about that. Nothing confusing at all. It's clear. It comes to you, it's marked top secret, return it. You have the privilege of being able to read it. But the bill says, return it. There's nothing hard about that. Now, let me deal with the Canadian example, Chairperson. Canadian example says the person receiving the information must prove to the court. So it's the person who received it that has to prove to the court. Now we're coming up with examples where you're saying, if one follows Mr. Ambrosini's example, now you see, Your Worship, we thought it was covering up malfeasance, but we found out it didn't. That's a bit of a strange example with respect. Because you must read the document and ascertain what it says. How can the elevator say, well, we thought it was covering up corruption, but we were mistaken? Well, perhaps the court will believe you. But again, you'll need to convince the court. And who knows, maybe the court will believe you and say, yes. We can't put this poor man away. So what is there is fine, Chairperson. So whoever receives it finds him or herself or herself facing this offense. Clause 18 says, if you find you're in possession of classified record, return it. That's all.
I'll get to you now, Honorable Mania, and to you, Honorable Swart. Honorable members, I want you first to either accept or reject the principle which you asked to be considered. If you agree with espionage, the crime as it is set out here now, and what you have is somebody that has made, who is collected, who is captured, he's made copies and he's on his way, and he is now going to pass it on to a foreign state, country, person, doesn't matter. That's what you have now. He's committed the crime of espionage. He doesn't have to meet his receiver yet, but he's intending to do that. He's guilty of the offense. Now he gets the person that he wants to pass it on to, and he then passes it on. The question that you raised was now the receiver. Surely he's also guilty of an offense. And that was not covered in the bill. The proposal that you're looking on now is merely to criminalize the action of the receiver too. And he's not doing much different from the person that is passing the information on to him. He's doing exactly the same. He's receiving something he shouldn't receive. So the crime is basically the same, except that in the one instance, the one is the giver, or the attempted giver, and in the other instance, the guy is the receiver. They both involve in the crime. If you catch them both, you're going to prosecute them both. You raise the question that the one person, the receiver, is not going to be able to be prosecuted under the way the bill is now structured, because this thing is only talking about the person passing on. So, do you want to punish the other person? If you do want to punish the other person, then the proposal here is what you should be looking at. And you should be looking at whether the words are properly captured. There's no difficulty in the wording, because the wording must be exactly the same as the wording that applies to the person that is carrying the information, except that it must now refer to the receiver. It must be exactly the same. The penalties must be exactly the same. You've caught two people now. They are not doing the same thing. They are doing two different things. One is passing on. The other one is receiving. But you agreed that they must both be punished. And so, the one that you haven't covered now is the receiver. So surely, you only need to adjust the crime that applies to the carrier to now apply to the receiver. So where the espionage crime refers to the person passing on the information, you take that out and you replace it with the receive. And then in all respects, this thing should be covering that scenario. Now, unless you say you don't want to punish the receiver, then you are creating an uncanny lacuna in the law. A very serious, not a gap, a very big hole for what you say yourself is a serious crime and for perpetrators to escape. Now, can I hear you on that, Honorable Members? Because you are sometimes talking about other crimes, but you are not addressing the issue of whether this thing, this proposal that we're busy discussing is addressing the concern that has come up. If you say the concern is a minor one, then we'd like to hear why. But logic and law will tell you that that can't be a minor one. How can you see the one that smokes the powder or whatever it is they smoke nowadays is no less guilty than the one that sold him the stuff. There might be a difference in the, but these things flow into one another. You can't let your crime stop with the person carrying the information, and when the receiver, the one that runs away with the stuff, you're not really interested in him. He's as guilty. And if you want to take care of that, then ask yourself a question, does this proposal deal with it? Honorable Abelsini, then the Honorable Mania, and then the Honorable Swat. Now, Honorable Abelsini's name has been written down here some time.
See, Mr. Chairman, I was trying to speak before you spoke, and now you're put to the meeting a different set of considerations. So I find myself either not addressing what you addressed or bringing us back. But the fundamental point is we are not dealing with documents. It is not about documents, it is about information. Information may be contained in a document, but not necessarily so. So this is something we must always keep in mind. 18 applies only to documents. You cannot bring back a piece of information. You can only bring back the document. What's the relevance of that? Once that you receive a piece of information, you receive it. Can't give it back, you are in possession. If you are part, so the crime is for you to be part of the disclosure, participate in the material elements and the psychological elements of that crime. If you want to make the receipt a crime, then you need to construe it in a manner other than the mere action of receiving it. It must have the same element. That it was the point I was making, and I want to stop at this because it was part of the debate before your intervention, and perhaps if I can address you later on what you said.
The Honorable Mania and then the Honorable Swat.
The one question is asked, I mean, I think there may be some agreement about our legislative intent. The problem is in the drafting. And I think the Honorable Ambrosini hits the legislative nail on the head when he raises the question of intent. I mean, you can be presumably found guilty of espionage if you unlawfully disclose information with the intention of both benefiting a foreign state, but on the receiving end, which we are now dealing with, no such intent is included in the drafting. So it would be possible, if you look at the drafting carefully, for a person who receives classified information to be charged with espionage, even if he or she did not have the intention of benefiting a foreign state. And I'm sure that that is not the Honourable Lander's intention. So I think we need to go take a very careful look at this draft and amend it.
Just on your point, I'm not sure we're talking. Are you talking about the proposal now, 162? Because I see intentionally, unlawfully, and intentionally there. I don't know. Are we looking at two different things? Can we hear the Honourable Swart now?
Yes, that's exactly the point. And I think we're so close to each other. What we are seeking to criminalize is the person that elicits the receipt of that document. He would offer it. He would offer a payment for it. And then the idea would be he would receive it to benefit a foreign state. We capture it to a certain degree here. And I'm in total agreement that a recipient that is seeking to benefit another country should be punished. The intent that concerns me is that we need to just tighten it up. Tighten it up to what we intend to benefit. The receipt must be to benefit a foreign state. What, as it is worded here, ought reasonable to have known.
Yes.
That's an objective outside test that is introduced by a court. And I think that is the only concern. If we tighten it up a bit, then we are ad idem as to the intent of what we want to achieve here. The issue of, you see, we're creating a separate offence here. We've got the possession offence, but this is the mere receiving. So as soon as you receive it, you've committed the offence. If you then take it back to the police, you've still received it. You still are guilty of that. There are two separate offences. There's receiving and possession. And I think we definitely need to tighten up the intent provision, and then we've reached each other as to narrowing it down to specifically refer to those persons that receive it, classified information, to benefit a foreign state. Thank you, Jim.
Honourable Fichler.
I get the point, but you know, firstly, I think there's a leeway that is given, that of saying that you receive a document that is written top secret. Obviously, you are going to be curious to open it. Yeah? And you see that, hey, this is a dangerous information that I'm having in my possession. I mean, if you were innocent somebody, then what you'll do, you'll have to return it because you realize that this thing is dangerous that I'm handling. Now, that is the leeway you're given. You're not going to be punished because of that, because of the receiving that, because you have realized that, hey, it's a serious crime to handle a top secret document. Now, but I agree with you that then somebody receives a document and intentionally he pays money for that. Then he is selling, it means he's a foreign person, he wants to get information, serious information, sensitive information about the country and all that, whatever. Obviously, the punishment definitely will have to be equal. Both the giver and the receiver, they have to punish. But perhaps I think you are right, we need to tighten the law on this. So so that there must be no abuse of the law. I think I agree on that. Because sometimes an innocent individual may receive something now. But now, there is this saying which says, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Right? You can't say, no, I'm ignorant of the law. That's why I took this thing and went away with it. Now,
Honourable Smuts.
Sir, I think what happened here, yet again, is the difference between the 2008 version and the 2010 version. The 2008 version does exactly what we have all been saying one by one. Your intent should deal with the intent to give advantage to another state. Then what happened in 2010? The intent was taken out, and instead the expression was inserted, information which the person knows or ought to reasonably have known or suspected would directly benefit another state. So I think that your 2008 solves the problem. It reads as follows. It is an offence punishable on conviction by imprisonment for a period not exceeding 25 years, A. To communicate, deliver, or make available state information with the intention to give advantage to another state. They use the word advantage, it's now been offence. B. To break, obtain, collect, capture, blah, 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 information with the intention to give advantage to another state, if the information is, and what follows. The idea of the person knowing or ought reasonably to have known comes from the 2010, and the intention has now been inserted in front of the communicate, and there lies your entire problem. I think we can go straight back to the 2008 formulation, and the problem is probably solved.
Honourable Mania.
Firstly, you don't agree with that. That's why you want to talk.
I agree completely with that.
And what more is there to be said?
Nothing. That's why I was signaling to you that I just want to say anything, Chair.
Landers.
Chair, we can look at that. Let's look at that. I think Mr. Fichler makes the point. So let us look at where the intent should lie. And then hopefully that will solve the problem. Let me just address the point raised by Mr. Ambrosini with reference to Clause 18. It doesn't only say you must return the document, and we acknowledge that documents don't only come in hard copy form, they're in digital and other forms. Clause 18 says report such possession. So there's a double onus on you. Yeah, but you report it. You say, you go to the police or you find Dennis Dromo and say, I've received this on my email. I'm reporting it in terms of Section 18 of the whatever. And you fulfill your, you've demonstrated your intent. And it would be hard for any court in that situation to say he had intentions of selling that information to someone else.
Honourable members, now you seem to have come closer to the issue. So you do agree that the receiver must be punished. You only have reservations that the proposal here is not properly structured because the intent seems not to be covering the area of the crime that you would like it to cover. Now, what about the sentencing? Can we get agreement that the sentencing should be the same as it goes through? Then can we instruct the state law advisor to add this in to that new document, but to keep it as something that's still not finalized? I don't want this now, because we seem only now to want to see where the intent lies and that the thing is properly captured. There is a proposal that we look at the 208 version. I don't know in what respect whether the 208 version captures three categories: top secret, secret, and confidential. Because if it doesn't, you might have to formulate that.
In 2008, the difference between that and this is that 2008 they didn't even deal with classified information. It was state information. So you won't find your three tears. That was what was wrong with 2008.
Okay.
It was right on intent, wrong on math.
So, then you will capture the three. And you will capture the sentences from the espionage section and also put them in as a descending order. And you will see that you move the mens rea to the, so that it is properly captured. That is the benefit to the other state, another state. Now, is another state captured properly there? It's not foreign country anymore. What? I think, are we not using foreign state? Are you listening to this, Honorable? Also, what is wrong is the, it's not another state, it should be changed to a foreign state. Okay. Then, that takes us to page 63. I think we need to go back now to the state law advisor, am I correct? We haven't yet dealt with page 63. Isn't that your work now?
Chairperson, we've dealt with some of aspects of the hostile activity offence as contained in Clause 33, but we still need to decide on the whole of Clause 33 as reflected on pages 63, 64, and 65.
So, Honourable Members, we have identified the source of this terminology which you were questioning some time ago. The terminology comes from PIA. And on a deeper investigation, PIA loaned the terminology from the Access to Information Act of Canadians. So that hostile activity, which we have defined in the bill now, is not a foreign concept, or rather, it's not a strange concept. It is a foreign concept because we did lend it from a foreign jurisdiction. So, Honourable Members, hostile activity. Yes, Honourable Mania.
Chair, again, the to reiterate what I said before we broke for lunch, the argument, the original argument in respect of hostile activity was that it was too broadly framed. We decided that the mischief was the unlawful disclosure of classified information to non-state actors engaged in hostile activity. It seemed to me that there was some agreement. If there is agreement, and that is our legislative intent, then I think that we ought to provide for that in the bill. There are two ways of doing it. We can either, it could either be covered possibly by an amalgamated espionage, by deleting hostile activity and capturing it under the espionage offence, or we could have a separate hostile activity offence, but then it needs to be narrowly drafted. And the key amendment would be to delete the wording directly or indirectly prejudicing the state and to insert, and this is, I mean, this is the key term, to insert a non-state actor engaged in hostile activity. And in our definitions, in Section 1, we already have a definition of non-state actor and of hostile activity. So then, in terms of a narrower framing of the hostile activity offence, we would essentially be criminalising the unlawful disclosure of classified information where the intention is to benefit a non-state actor engaged in hostile activity.
Exactly. very strong consensus from your Chairman. Colleague. Yes, Honourable Apostino. Or are you going to differ with him? You agree with him or are you differing?
Well, if I can speak, I'll tell you. Maybe. Okay. No. I think that there is really a fatigue here, because I think we're going in circles and we're not very, perhaps we're not as focused as we should be. No, you are. No, sir, not, perhaps I'm not as focused. I mean. Okay. We are really also edgy and
tired. Can you get to the point, Oliver?
Okay, the point that I'm making, building on what David was saying, is that it should be, because we have defined it, not for the purpose, not which prejudice the state, but it should be for the aimed at committing, aiding, and abating a hostile activity. We got the definition, it works. Then we have raised the crime on a threshold higher than the mere disclosure, because the mere disclosure always prejudices the state. And I think that that's what we should do. When I'm being clear, do I need to repeat the words?
Honorable members, we are dealing with something quite specific, and I would not want to capture these words across the floor. I would rather like to see a written version.
There are six words. Aimed at committing, aiding, or abating an hostile activity. Seven.
That's not six words. I say that's not six words. You fooled me. Yes, Honorable Mania first and then the Honorable Swartz.
Chair, we obviously have to debate this matter, but I would still argue, and I'll certainly submit a draft and canvass support for our position, which would be simply to focus on who benefits. And in the hostile activity offence, it must be a non-state actor engaged in hostile activity. It would seem to me that the Honourable Ambrosini, or one of the weaknesses of the Honourable Ambrosini's formulation would be that while we would accept that, for example, it's very unlikely that News 24 could be construed to, for example, be a non-state actor engaged in hostile activity, it would be possible for perhaps a malicious prosecutor to argue that News 24 might somehow have been aiding or abetting hostile activity. I would think that our option is democratically safer, Chair.
Chair, I think...
Yes, Honourable Swart.
I think, Chair, both suggestions capture the problem that there isn't hostile activities in the body of the definition of that section, and I think we need to look at the words and see which is the best and the more suitable. I think we are in agreement that we need to relook at that. They both have benefits to me. This morning I argued the need to insert similar along the lines of Dr. Ambrosini, aimed at or promoting or the verb, the hostile activity. The mere disclosure itself of the document is not the hostile activity. But it's also in line with what the DA says, that the non-state actor benefits from the hostile activity. There's also the verb. So I think, Chair, let's get a written... I don't know if we're going to be able to finalise it today. let's look at it and see which is, we are in agreement that we need to improve that sentence too. It's not merely the disclosure of the document, that's the essence. The disclosure of the document is not the hostile activity. Thank you, Chair.
Chairman?
The Honourable Mania first and then Honourable Abbasini.
Chair, once we clear about the mischief, and the spookery have been clear about the mischief is the concern that classified information may be disclosed to non-state actors engaged in hostile activity such as Al-Qaeda. That seems to me to be an entirely legitimate concern. If that is the concern and we believe that it's legitimate, then let's legislate for the mischief. And it's therefore, I mean, it seems to me that if we criminalize the disclosure of classified information to non-state actors who are engaged in hostile activity, then the concerns of the security services are covered. And I notice Mr. Dlomo nodding in support.
The Honourable Launders, I recognised you.
Provided we don't ignore the fact that there could be directly or indirectly prejudice to the Republic. So you're bringing in a different scenario altogether. You're assuming that simply because the non-state actor is not engaged in a hostile activity, then the communication of the information then becomes legal or legitimate. It isn't the case.
Mumbling there, you seem to be angry about that proposal. Honourable Member, are you on your feet, Honourable Member?
No, it's just my back hurts and nothing. May I? Okay, there is the who and there is the what. Now, the definition of non-state actor basically includes everyone but a foreign state. So it would include UI, the press, and anyone else. I think that for purposes of this crime, the who doesn't matter, who does it, who receives it, anyone who does it and receives. What matters is the what. I propose that the what would be in order to commit aid or abate hostile activity. I thought that through again, I think it's too vast, because aid and abating, having heard what David was saying, could be, it goes beyond the definition. If we stick by the definition that we agreed to, and as you said, Mr. Chairman, it's sealed and closed, then we can say which is that amount to hostile, an act of hostile activity. A disclosure which is that amount to an act of hostile activity. That's the mischief. And that's what we want to punish. If he doesn't do that, then it is an unlawful disclosure, which is still punished under the other clause of the bill. The mere unlawful disclosure, which by definition directly prejudices the Republic, because it always does, that's taken care of under that provision. Under this provision, we take care of that, the what, of that which is captured in the definition of hostile activity.
Honourable members, let me find out what it is that you're complaining about. You seem to agree that there should be such an offence. Then you're not sure on what who should be punished. Can we first look at the structure. Is this offence going to take the structure of espionage, where we are dealing with an offender dealing with top secret information, and then an offender dealing with classified information that is secret, and then an offender that's dealing with classified information that is confidential? Are we looking at that? Is the offence going to be defined in those? Let's define the words, but is that what we're looking at? Because then we can agree on the sentences in the meantime. Are the sentences going to be the same as that of espionage? Are we going to come down, go soft? So can we just hear? So the minimum is not going to apply, but the maximum in terms of the top secret. Yes, but what is the maximum? Because it's 25 at the moment. So, there's a difference of opinion. They said that we had agreed to lower it.
We're persuaded by Mr. Fichler that espionage, pure and simple, is a higher or lower order crime, as the case may be. Let's not be arbitrary. I mean, let's be very sure what the offence is before we...
I heard you,
but let's not be arbitrary. We're talking about sabotage, terrorism, aggression against the Republic, strategic or a strategic asset thereof. That's serious stuff. No prejudice to the fact means nothing. It's a nothing. No, it's absolute nothing. The crime at issue is aggression against the Republic, sabotage, terrorism. And at the people of the Republic or a strategic asset of the state.
The top secret is 20. Can we deal with one thing? Because I know when you deal with too many things, you get tired and then you complain as if it's my fault. Can we deal with the sentence? So you got 20. Yes, Honorable Bishop?
Yeah. I think I agreed with Honorable Manet. We are seeing that espionage is the most serious offense, and therefore it must have the highest penalty. And then the others must gradually go down. And we agree that the next one should be 20 years, and then go down and go down. That is from top secret.
It seems to me that with secrets you would have to go up. You can't go much downer than 15, can you? Your main category, your secret, is at 15. Yes, Honorable Mania.
Chair, I'm reluctant to discuss the sentence when we haven't agreed on the definition of the crime. Because... Honorable Glanders is fraying at the edges.
What he said? I said first he sought out the offence, which we have not yet done until you take Mr. Mania's formulation.
Chair, if we are talking about the criminalizing the disclosure of classified information to a non-state actor involved in hostile activity, with the intention of benefiting a non-state actor engaged in hostile activity, that is one thing. We would consider some tough sentences, but it's entirely another matter if it's a question of prejudicing the state, which could mean anything. If the Mail and Guardian publishes a story which severely embarrasses government, presumably it's prejudiced the state. If I'm wrong, tell me.
Honourable members, can I get some order here, please?
Chairman?
Yes, Honourable Ebrasini.
Through you, to Mr. Lander, I have made a point which I would like Mr. Lander first to consider and address me on. The point I've made is that in each unlawful disclosure,
there is by necessity a prejudice to the state, because the information can only be classified to prevent demonstrable harm to the state. No demonstrable harm to the state if disclosed, no classification. Demonstrable harm is bigger than prejudice. Therefore, each and every disclosure results in prejudice to the state. If it is only prejudice to the state, the hostile activity offense would be identical to the unlawful disclosure offense. Hence, we need to tie it to that extra threshold of sabotage, terrorist activities, etc. That's the point, I think, that if I'm wrong, please address me, because I don't understand it. One. Two, all those crimes that we're talking about, terrorist, sabotage, etc., are going to be punished separately. The sanction here should not address the need of punishing those crimes, and there would be an accessory action.
Honorable members, you seem to like to differ with one another. I asked you about the sentences, whether they should be the same. And from my left I heard, no, we should go with what the Honorable Fichler had said. And then the Honorable Fichler, I said, what was that? And he said, no, well, it had to be reduced. Because espionage is the more serious one, so this one should be reduced. And I then later on heard that that was not what was said, so I don't know if it's fatigue, honorable members, but I had already at that stage when you agreed, crossed out 25 and put in 20, only later on to hear that that was not agreed upon. Now, what is it then that we are agreeing on, honorable? So what?
Jay, I think we should put 20 years in, and we can, if necessary, revisit it once we've looked at the finalization of the offense. I think that's the way to go. I think it's very important to note that this, I think Dr. Ambrosini's point, and it clouded me, my thinking, because I was thinking that this is actually the hostile activities offenses of sabotage, and therefore it is very serious. But it's actually not that. It's the communication, the unlawful communication, which prejudices the state, and therefore it could well be, as Mr. Fischler says, that we could have a descending order, but we're going to sit now, I mean, at 25 years or 20 years, let's put 20 years, and we can revisit it once we've defined it fully, and we believe that it should be the same as espionage. Otherwise, we're going to sit all day just on that one issue.
Yes, honorables.
Let's not forget that the criminalization of the acts of sabotage, terrorism, and the like will occur or does occur in other statutes, presumably the 2004 Terrorism Act. That's not what we're doing here. We're dealing with information. And until we all agree that on Mr. Mania's formulation, it is the intentional contribution to hostile activity by a non-state actor. At that point, if we all agree on that, then we can start putting in serious offences. But no, we can't agree to it until then. We're looking for an intentional contribution to hostile activity by non-state actors. Now, we have to start by... The non-state actor is also any person, huh? if you will revisit the definition. But so we're not going to conclude it now, sir. But all we're saying is that we won't agree to the final penalty until we conclude the formulation of the actual offence. And the intention has to go to contributing to hostile activity as defined. And in our view, the idea of prejudicing the state finds absolutely no place in a provision like this. None whatsoever.
You don't like what the Canadians are saying. Honorable members, I was merely trying to see what it is that needs to go into the working document so that we give as much instructions as we can so that we don't get too much input that we ourselves could have made. So we have agreed then that there are three categories here, that we need to deal with the three categories of classification, top secret, secret, and confidential. When it comes to this hostile activity, we've agreed on that, and so that the structure will have to deal with that. I would propose that these words that you are defending, Honorable Smuts, that you circulate those words, and also to the state law advisor. I know that the Honorable Abrasini is saying that six words, and I would also like him to circulate those six words in context. Honorable Abrasini, don't circulate just your six words. Put them in the context and circulate it. Yes. But we'd like to see it in the structure, in its completeness, so that we don't have to guess. Because otherwise there would be another argument that this thing was not correctly captured the way you actually wanted it. We don't want to get into that argument. Can the state law advisor then take note of that? You want to interfere now before I finalize this matter, Honorable Mayor?
No, Chair, just in the debate on defining the offence, I wanted to try and give some comfort to the Honourable Landis. If he looks at the definition of non-state actor, it's fairly broad, but there's a qualifier. We're saying that hostile activity would... we're saying in respect of the hostile activity offence that it doesn't apply to any non-state actor. It applies to non-state actors involved in hostile activity. And hostile activity is defined, as you know, and includes reference to aggression, sabotage, and terrorism. It would seem that if we go the way I propose, we would satisfy both the department and civil society who are concerned about the broad definition of hostile activity, of the hostile activity offence.
That point was well made, but Honourable Member, but it was made earlier on. You did remind the Honourable Member that the definition included that of any person, so am I correct, Honourable Member? State law advisor, have you got that? You're going to get help. If you don't get that help, you will contact me and report those people that are not going to send through their proposal. And then you are to look at that. Now, there's been broad discussion here. We always try to limit your imagination to something concrete so that you don't present us something that we had not discussed here. But in this case, there's been a lot of discussion. I've tried to get you something that you could work with. So the structure is there. All three of those categories are going to be covered. It's not going to look much different from what it is on page... where we were now. It's not going to look much different from the way it looks on page 33, except there's going to be some new words which has been proposed by these honourable members. 63. Because the basic structure is there. There is a proposal on the cards that 25 years is too much. You bring it down. So just for that one, some guideline, then you can put the 25 in bold square brackets and underline the 20 and leave the others as they are because they're not yet agreed to. You can take out the minimum sentences because that's already been agreed to. and then you will report back to us. But I would like you, I'm not sure whether the honorable members want this in the document, in the working document, given that there's still some work to be done. Perhaps we should, perhaps the working document should delete all these other proposals that you have around here. Can you clean that up? Because there's another proposal on 64, which I don't think we're going to go into, because that is again back to where we joined the two, and I had said in the old assembly that we're not going to go that route. You wanted to go that route, you didn't agree when we got there, so we split the two now. So what is on 64 and 65 and 66? And 67, yes. I'm not sure what we have on 68 here. Are you with me there, honorable members? So we go right to page 70 from 63, without excluding 63 and part of the middle part of 64. So from the middle of 64, where the word proposal appears. Sorry?
On page 64, it relates to receiving information, that particular proposal.
That is the part of the espionage, that's the receiver culprit.
Surely we've agreed on a reconceptualization or a redraft of espionage, and this, and it should carry through, surely. So that your intention is to benefit.
Is that not captured on 62, the receiver?
Surely that carries through to the offense of the receiver. Oh, I beg your pardon. It's an offense punished by. No, but you need to change your formulation, because the formulation now as it is as in espionage, it suffers the same weakness. So it just carries through now to make it clear that your intention opzet slaan op die bevoordeling van die ander land. Nee, it's that simple.
Yeah,
of praat precies zo. It's the 2008 version of the espionage. But the intention must be...
Willeke mensen stand van die hand gaan.
Meneer, dank. Partij keer help ik om het in twee talen Afrikaans te helpen. Het is eindelijk maar goed voor effectieve... Wat is die woord dat ik zeg? For simplifying the intention.
Somebody translate that for me?
Yes, you see what you're causing.
Yeah.
There's no presumption here that Afrikaans is understood by everybody.
I know. Very bad.
Can I get your attention? On page 62... There is this proposal, and it is subsection 5, and it is supposed to follow. Now, what proposal is that?
It is on page 62. It relates to the espionage offense, where you receive information that you will have a similar type of thing when you receive it. Then
so that one we've agreed, you capture that. Take out the word proposal, okay? And then we go to page 63. That's the one you're going to go and work on, okay, with the heading. And then we go to page 64. Now, the proposal here, what one is this? Is this not surely going to come out?
And that was also just to be discussed, and I think we've resolved that issue in respect of the espionage offences, so that can come out, and then we will delete from 64 onwards.
So, honourable members, from page 64, where you see the word in bold proposal, right through to page 70, where you get the word harbouring. everything above harboring is to be deleted, and your deletion will continue going back now to the word, to page 64, to proposal. So everything on page 65, 66, 67, 68, 69, and those two paragraphs on page 70, and you leave harboring. Am I correct, Mr. Boyson? We're going to adjourn here for a few minutes. There's tea outside, I'm told. It's 10 to 4. We shall come back at 5 past 4. The meeting is adjourned, members.
Chair, just before you adjourn, would it be possible to capture our proposal on the hostile activity offence in the consolidated bill? We will make that proposal as soon as possible.
As an option.
As an
then honourable members, we then proceed to page 70, and we have to now over to the state law advisor, where I believe there are outstanding matters which we have given them to attend to. Is that correct, Ms. Boyson? First, refer us to what documents you're going to be talking to and the pages and so on, so that the members can focus. Over to you, Ms. Boyson.
Jefferson, on page 76 going on to 77, it relates to clause 42, improper classification. On the previous occasion, we were asked to provide for the various classification levels and to also go and have a look at the penalties that is provided for in the Act relating to all the offences. May I ask if my colleague Sisa Makabene to take us through this particular clause?
Are you going to be talking to what is on page 76 and 77?
That's correct.
This is not contained in a separate document.
No, Chairperson.
Proceed then.
We were asked to look at that clause, and to look at the penalties that are provided in clause 42, and to see if they are not to compare them to offense to penalties that are provided for in other comparable legislation. And we look at the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act of 2004, where the offences of corruption are provided for. And in that provision, There is a grading of the offences, of the penalties, depending on whether the High Court, the Regional Court, or the Magistrates Court is giving a sentence to the person. And with the High Court, the maximum sentence is life imprisonment, and the Regional Court, it's the maximum sentence is 18 years, and the Magistrates Court, the maximum period is 5 years. And our view is that the person, the offences are not exactly comparable to the offence in this provision. And the other provision that we looked at was the Criminal Law Amendment Act, where it relates to the Criminal Law Amendment Act of 1997, where it relates to the offence of fraud. And you would recall that provision relates to the Criminal Law Amendment Act, Section 51, provided for minimum offences for various offences, minimum sentence for various offences that were listed in the schedules to that legislation. And with fraud, there is also a grading according to the amounts that are the that are involved in the offence. So, for instance, with amounts, there are amounts involving 500,000 or more, and amounts involving 100,000 or more, and amounts involving 10,000 or more. And with those offences, Jefferson, there is a penalty of not less than 15 years and a penalty of not less than 20 years for a second offender, and a penalty of not less than 25 years for a person who is a third or subsequent offender. So our view is that the person, the committee, because there is no real, there can be no comparison between these offences. The committee would need to take a decision on what is the appropriate sentence with regard to the clause. Thank you.
You were dealing with 42 now. And 41?
Yeah,
let's deal with what you have, and then we'll come back to the discussion. Proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I was asked to provide a printout for the committee members to compare clause 41 with the relevant corresponding clause in the National Archives and Records Act. And I've got the document on a handout here. We can maybe just distribute them. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, in the bill, we have the destruction or alteration of valuable information, and it is providing for a conviction to final to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 3 years. The bill provides for the destruction or alteration of valuable information, and then also provides that where the destruction or alteration is for a purpose or a manner authorized by law, that is fine. Chairperson, when we look at the National Archives and Records Services provision, and that's section 16 of that particular act. It provides for a person who willfully damages any public or non-public record in the control of a governmental body, or otherwise than in accordance with this act or any other law, removes or destroys or erases such record, is then also guilty of an offence and liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 2 years. Chairperson, the differences then between the two would then be in the bill we provide for the alteration or destruction of valuable information, whilst the National Archives Act provides for public or non-public record in the control of a governmental body, and also for a period of 2 years. Chairperson, you will note from the heading of the National Archives Record Services Act, the citation, that this act was promulgated in 1996. So that's also a further aspect that might also be considered. We are dealing here with classified information. That's a further difference between the two pieces of legislation. So
is that valuable information not classified?
I apologize, valuable information, as I said earlier. So the differences are that we're dealing in this particular course with valuable information, and in the National Archives Act, they are dealing with public or non-public records in the control of a governmental body. Now, public record is defined in the National Archives Act to mean a record created or received by a governmental body in pursuance of its activities, whilst a non-public record means a record created and received by a private individual or a body other than one defined... my handwriting is a bit bad. Other than a governmental body in terms of this act or a provincial law pertaining to the records or archives.
Proceed. I think we can dispose of it quickly because there seems very little thing for debate. Does somebody want to talk first? I'm just talking about 41. Can you just hold on? Because let me see if we can dispose of it. Yes, so I'm going to have to see.
I'll start first, but we'll allow those who have the final say to speak last. I agree that 41 needs to be replaced. 41 as it stands, I think it's the long run. The language is wrong. Anyone who unlawfully destroys and then accepts that where such destruction is or alteration is for the purpose of a manner authorized by the law, the parenthetical is included in the word unlawfully and is unnecessary. But what I like about the language of the National Archives and Records Services of South Africa is that the action needs to be willful. And I will give you a legal opinion between willfully and intentionally. It requires not just intention on committing the action, but the intention of bringing about the consequences of the action. So I think that that's what we need. And it can be tied up, but a derivative of this language is what I would see. I would like to see replacing 41.
I think what, if I understand Mr. Ambrosini, what he is saying then is that 41 should read any person who willfully damages or valuable information otherwise than in accordance with this act or any other law, well, damages, removes, destroys, or erases valuable information otherwise than in accordance with this act, is guilty of an offense, etc., etc.
Sure, I heard you right, Honorable Ambrosini. I thought you were saying that the offense under the Archives Act was better captured than the offense under 41.
Dealing with valuable information in this case, would it not be sensible just to align it with the National Archives Act, provide for a sentence of not exceeding 2 years rather than 3 years?
Honourable Honourable.
Clearly, Mr. Manuel wasn't listening. The point I made was that the Archives Act was approved in 1996. It was 15 years ago. And if 15 years ago it was deemed to be okay to penalize someone to 2 years in prison for this offense, 11 years hence, it should be increased. And all we're doing is increasing it to 3 years.
Yes, Honorable Man.
Chair, I was listening, but I don't accept the argument because I don't accept that in disclosing a document there would be any less harm 11 years previously. I can't understand why it's related to time.
An argument which has been made on several occasions, the discretion lies with the court, but the court applied the discretion with looking at the maximum. So if something is a median situation, there is a maximum of 30 years, we'll give 15 years. If we reduce the maximum to 10 years, looking at the same, to 20 years, looking at the same situation, may give 7 years. And what we, and I keep saying this in all the committees I have the privilege of serving, our prisons are a disaster. They're overcrowded. We cannot manage them. It's many of the inmates are held under terms and conditions which no longer comply with the Constitution. So let's be mindful of also that situation before we pass more and more legislation requiring people to go to jail. And I don't think that there is any reason now to be any harsher than people were in 15 years ago.
Honorable members, I think the first question you ask yourself, are these two offenses the same? Or are they different? If you come to the conclusion that they are much the same, then the issue of 2 and 3 years should have very little debate. If they are not the same, then the question is, do you retain 41 with the necessary alterations that have already been proposed, and do you keep the sentence the same at 3 years? I would like to see somebody that destroyed my marriage certificate.
go to jail for the whole lot more years than
Sherman.
But persuade me otherwise. Yes, sir.
Yeah, there is another question that I think we need to ask ourselves. We know that a person cannot be convicted for the same conduct under two different statutes. We know that we cannot write two different provisions for the same conduct where you violate law number one and law number two. So we need first and foremost to ask ourselves how the crime under 41 differs in conduct to the crime under Section 61 of Act 43. And if the answer is that there is no substantial difference, and the difference is not substantial, then I think that we are almost forced to say under 41 that any person who blah, blah, blah shall be punished in terms of the National Archives and Records Services of South Africa.
Honorable Mania, and then the Honorable Smith. I speak on the understanding of the law that there would be no problem if both these laws existed side by side, because it would certainly be up to the prosecuting authority under which one he would prosecute. He could prosecute you under 41, alternatively under 16. And you can't be found guilty of both, I agree with that. But he could prosecute you. There's nothing wrong with the two laws. Very often you come across it. Honorable Mayne will tell you in the Defense Act that there are so many offenses there that are similar, although they might be of a disciplinary nature, but they are very similar, and you get charged in the alternative. If your argument is that because they are similar or they're exactly the same, one of them has got to go, I would say that an incorrect legal conclusion that you have come to. Can I hear the state law advisor on this, please?
Chairperson, one needs to have a look at the definition of valuable information, and also as a definition of public and non-public record. And public record is defined in the National Archives Act as a record created or received by a governmental body in pursuance of its activities, while the non-public record means a record created and received by a private individual or a body other than one defined as a governmental body in terms of this act or provincial law pertaining to records or activities. Chairperson, and we've defined valuable information in the bill to mean information whose unlawful, Chairperson, I just want to read this, one that we've captured this morning, whose unlawful alteration, destruction, or loss is likely to deny the public or individuals of a service or a benefit to which they are entitled.
Having said all that, I suppose you conclude as follows. What's their conclusion? They're different.
They can be different documents. They can be different documents.
So you're in agreement with me. Can the two live side by side in our legal system?
Depends on the charge sheet and under what you're being charged, under which act you're being charged. So, Jefferson was quite correct to say that if you're prosecuted in terms of the National Archives Act, you would be prosecuted in terms of Section 16 of the National Archives Act.
Yes, Honourable
I'm sorry now to complicate this debate, Chair, but we need to look at Clause 35, which is about hacking, modification of computer contents and the like. It's headed interception of or interference with classified information. However, only the first two sub-clauses deal with classified information. Because, I mean, we work now on the assumption that what we've just been discussing is valuable information directly comparable to the public records held by the National Archive. But this whole computer section also deals with modification, destruction, what are the words in these other two? Also deals with the alteration and destruction of information, and since electronic also modification and other things. Now, they also already carry maximum penalties, and I'm afraid you are going to have to look at them. 35.1 deals with intentional access or interception of classified information without authority, and that carries 10 years. That's right, because it's classified. Subclause 2 deals with intentional interference with classified information for modification, destruction, or the rendering ineffective of computer records. It also carries 10 years. That's right. But now we get to the subclauses that don't deal with classified information. They deal with state information, which is, as you know, anything. If you produce, sell, offer, procure for use a device designed to overcome the security measures in a computer for the protection of state information, that's also 10 years. A person... Can your heading do that for you, because we're dealing simply with state information? Then why does it refer to state information? Yeah, but on interpretation, subclause 1 explicitly says classified information. Subclause 2 explicitly says classified information. 3, however, says state information. 4 says state information. 5 says makes no reference. Let me just run through them. 3 is the production, procurement, etc. of a device to overcome. 4 is the utilization of such devices to unlawfully overcome security measures designed to protect state information. 10 years. 5 is denial of service, where you contravene any provision of the section for the purpose of denial of service. 10 years. So that would be either state information or classified. Then, anyone who willfully gains unauthorized access to any computer which belongs to or is under the control of the state, or any data, I'm looking for a purpose, there's no purpose, unauthorized access, 2 years. Anyone who willfully causes a computer who belongs to under the control of the state in order to make it perform a function, 2 years. Any person who willfully performs unauthorized modification of the contents of any computer under the control of the state in order to impair the operation, preventing the access, 5 years. That's an electronic version of the stuff in clause 41, I would think. And the rest is just extraterritoriality. But so, I mean, Chairman, we must decide whether under this heading all of this deals with classified information. It would seem to me that the first two subclauses say classified and the others do not. And so, to the extent that this also deals with alteration and destruction, surely you need alignment there as well.
Yeah, what the Honourable Member is saying is that it's not the same offence. And I think the sentence is quite in line with what you've just read now from the computer section. Honourable members, can I conclude on at least the fact that we don't need the archives section 16 included here. We need merely to see how we can change 41 if you don't like the wording. Then the first thing that we have noticed is that we need to include intentionally. We need to include intention in 41. Now, let's not be inconsistent. We've been using intentionally. You had willfully now you to show there was a break to your thinking. No, it's the same thing now. Willfully and intentionally South African born criminal. I don't care on if you spoke to your senior counsel. No. South African law, is a question of mens rea. When it comes to mens rea, the thing is really simple. They use the Latin word to get accuracy to what it is that you want to say. We had this argument just earlier this morning, and we concluded on the basis that we would proceed with intentionally. Now you want to put willfully in here, and that's going to show that we are not really sure when it comes to mens rea whether these things are mean the same. Intentionally, honorable members, what else is missing? Honorable lawyers, you had a you should just have a look at at what I say there that might be of relevance, I'm not sure.
Okay. Any person who intentionally and unlawfully destroys, removes, alters, or erases valuable information, otherwise than in accordance with this act, is guilty of an offense and liable on to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding, agreed to the period, or to both such fine and imprisonment.
Then you should also align the computer section sub the 15, which is about the reliability of data. Make that 2 years as well, not five.
Well, we haven't agreed to 2 years. There was a whisper. I'm not sure where it came from. I heard a whisper before my left. I don't know who it was. The whisper of significance was unable.
Yeah, I did propose that we align the archives back to this door.
Except that the Honourable Lander says you're taking us backwards if you don't take into consideration inflation of offences.
Do you understand that losing your marriage certificate was probably very traumatic, but it was no less traumatic 10 years ago, or no more traumatic?
Well, remember, let me tell you something secret now. They lost my driver's license, okay, and I had to go for another test and I failed. Well, I failed the not the driver's license. I failed the learner's license. I failed the learner's license because they asked me to write immediately when I was complaining.
Yes.
I did not have an opportunity to. Yeah. So I went down and I just failed by one or two things.
No,
I was quite there. And I came back the next day and I passed.
Very good. Well, that's what.
And I went back the next week and I passed. So, but it was a traumatic experience for me to realize that I just failed something I thought I would walk through. So you understand, I don't like the idea that somebody should just go away for 2 years if I could catch that culprit. I mean,
I'd like to see him go for a whole lot more than three. Yes, sir.
I understand it was traumatic, Chair. I'm just arguing that it was equally traumatic.
There are other documents I might lose in this profession, an honorable member, that might drive me to suicide. But on a more serious note, honorable members, I think 3 years is really fine. It's a discretion in any event. But if you talk 2 years, you seem to going to reduce the significance and the importance of the crime that we are trying to. Don't you want more focused officials? Don't you want more honest officials? Don't you want a better public service? Isn't that what you want to say to the people out there, that you're really taking this thing serious? That somebody that doesn't intentionally comes and mess around with these things, you're not going to tolerate that? Can we go back to three honorables? And then the Honorable Launders version, what is the comment on that? The Honorable Main has already said it, see. Can we ask the State Law Advisor to include, yes sir,
We are looking at the formulation, and we just want to raise one thing in respect of that, and we just want the committee to maybe think about it. The bill currently provides for protection of valuable information from alteration, loss, and destruction. So if we say a person intentionally and unlawfully destroys, removes, alters, otherwise than in accordance with this Act, might create problems.
Sorry, where is the problem you wanted to say?
The problem is not with the formulation, was otherwise than in accordance with this Act. And whilst the bill currently provides for the protection of valuable information against alteration, destruction, loss of valuable information.
Version with this late alteration is going to suffice. Honorable members, can we hear the State Law Advisor? I think there's still some more.
Before you leave 41, sir, may I request that they look at Clause 35? It is also about the destruction and loss of information of. And on my reading, only the first two subclauses deal with classified information. And there are a number that deal with exactly the same phenomenon. How can you jump to 10 years and 5 years?
Is the complaint about the sentence, or are you saying it's the same crime?
Mainly the same point. It has to be equal. How can you, the same offense carry different sanctions in different laws or in different sections?
Okay, there's no further debate on that one. The State Law Advisor, in a separate opinion document, you will look at 35, those offenses relating to computer offences, and you will compare it with the offence in 41, and you will advise us whether there's anything irregular. when one compares the two, whether they are, when you look at it holistically, whether there's anything unconstitutional about it.
The whole lot applies to classified information, that's not a problem. But it's in as much as it applies to ordinary information. Then the next question is, do you in fact need these offences for ordinary state information? I don't know, maybe.
Let's think it will all be known when we get the opinion. You've got that.
Chairman, I wish to record that I am of the opinion that we cannot have two statutory provisions imposing criminal sanctions for what appears to be substantially the same conduct. But then somebody needs to explain me the difference, and I have not. Well,
Abrosini, are you also talking about 35 now?
No, I'm talking about the 41 vis-a-vis the Section 16 of the National Archives and Record. We have had the discussion. You stated your position. I just want to place on record that I see the things differently, and I think what we're doing is impermissible. Of 16 of the National Archives, it's a bit 41.
Modification is the same as disappearance.
Please.
I just want to add one extra little thingy. When the state law advisors look at this, it is, read the section. When you look at it, just compare with Electronic Communications and Transactions Act, not the ECA, for a compare, because that may already be applicable to ordinary state information. I don't remember. It's about commercial computers, but that may very well already be applicable to, and then you just change this whole section into classified information, clearly and explicitly, and no more problem.
Honourable Member, I've already referred this thing for opinion, and you'll get that feedback, and then you can differ with the opinion, you can do the adjustments. Once we have had the opinions, can you then proceed?
Just forgive me, just indulge me for 1 second. I just want to take you back for 2.5 seconds to 40. It's one word. Any person who provides information, it must be any person who provides intelligent information. We have defined intelligence, otherwise this will apply. If the policeman asks me which way the bicycle thief went, and I intentionally tell him that he went left rather than went right. The word intelligence information, intelligence is defined, and then it captures what we mean. So otherwise, any information given to any policeman, which is part of the obvious intelligence structure, will trigger this penalty, and that's not the intention.
Can the state law advisors take note of that concern and advise us? It's a simple thing. You don't have to do it now, because it was not on the agenda. But 2 seconds was longer than my. 2 seconds was much longer than I expected. But let's look at that. And we will be advised about that when you get back. Okay. We've got that. The honourable member is saying that 40. This is your peddler now. He's selling things. Oh, he's passing on false stuff, and that must be intelligence. I don't know whether you can have the word intelligence and information next to each other. But whatever it is, the honourable member seems to believe that intelligence would be better than information should be removed. You will obviously have to look at the definitions of intelligence and information. Because there is a distinct difference. Can we proceed, Ms. Poyser?
Chairperson, may I ask
Mr.
Makaveni to just proceed on clause 42?
page are you now?
Chairperson, the proposal with regard to clause 42 is that it should read subclause 1, any person who knowingly classifies information, and we propose that knowingly should be intentionally. Who intentionally classified information as A, top secret, B, secret, or free confidential, in order to achieve any purpose ulterior to this act, including the classification of information, in order to, Roman figure 1, conceal breaches of the law, Roman figure 2, promote or further an unlawful act, inefficiency, or an administrative error, Roman figure 3, prevent embarrassment to a person, organization, or agency, or Roman figure 4, give undue advantage to anyone within a, give undue advantage to anyone within a competitive credit bidding process. And subsection 2, in the case, in the event of subsection 1A, is guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding. And then the committee would need to determine the appropriate sentence there. And B, in the event of subsection 1B, is guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding the number of years to be determined by the committee. And C, in the event of subsection C, is guilty of an offense and liable on conviction to a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding the number of years to be determined by the committee. So A, B, and C, the difference is top secret, secret, and confidential. Thank
you. Voice, where were you reading from now? Because I'm having difficulty on my document.
Chairperson, we're reading from, unfortunately we handed out the document on Friday last week, but the intention was that the provision must be redrafted to give the effect that there are certain levels of classification and that you want to then also consider certain penalties regarding when you have the information that is classified knowingly or intentionally with a certain penalty attached to that particular top secret, secret, or confidential level.
Yeah, that was the Honourable Stigler. I could see his, yes, Honourable Swartz.
So, yes, we definitely want to increase the penalty from the existing 3 years in the draft, and we spoke about, I think, 15 years at some stage. And then to have a sliding scale for the A, secret, B, secret, C, confidential. And this is obviously the very important point of emphasizing the fact that this act is not to be used to conceal any fraudulent or unlawful activities, and for that reason the sentences will be very high. What we need to just consider is what that sentence should be and the deterrent effect that will, the message that it will send out in imposing that sentence. I'm in agreement that we need to split it ABC to give an indication of the different hierarchy. We can look at, I know we spoke about 15, maximum 15, maybe 15, 10, 5 is the suggestion that we need to consider it. I think we need to bear in mind that, again, getting back to nothing being cast in stone, but our espionage is 25, the top secret. hostile activities, we suggested 20 years. This is slightly less severe than that, but equally a serious offence. So let's deliberate on that.
Honourable Landers, I think what sought to inform us, Chairperson, was of Mandela's earlier input. He was somewhat rudely interrupted. We were yanked away from 42 and taken to other parts of the bill. But he took us through the provisions of the OCA, the Criminal Law Amendments Act, and so on. So on the basis of that initial input, I think we should stick to 15, 10, 5.
The wording is fine on the members. Can we then ask that particular clause be incorporated now? And that the existing 42 be deleted? And the one that you read out be inserted? And you also just record that it was agreed upon, even if you're going to underline it like you wanted to. Then can you take us to your next presentation?
Chairperson, the next presentation is on the regulation. That's on clause 48.
In addition to what we have, I just want to remind of something which was discussed, understood, agreed. It would seem that this is the place, but we asked them to capture it, or it could be elsewhere. The fact that nobody can be convicted if the classification is erroneous, which could be phrased, and that's what was captured in the document that the Honorable Landers read to us on Friday. So it could be stated that the erroneous classification of a relevant piece of information is an exculpatory defense, or they can capture it in a more elegant manner.
Yes, sir.
Chairperson, doesn't intention cover that? Intentionally, doesn't it cover the point that the Honorable Member is going to trade?
I'm not being clear. That's not the issue. The issue is a different one, and I said this might not be the right place, but it's the issue is that if somebody is convicted, if somebody is accused of having disclosed a confidential piece of information, not of having it improperly classified. Somebody is accused of having disclosed a classified piece of information. He should be able to raise as a defense the fact that the piece of information was erroneously classified. If somebody classifies the grocery list as top secret, and somebody discloses it and is accused, that person should be able to say it should have not been classified in the first place. Intentionally or non-intentionally, it could be the product of error, good faith, whatever it is.
Honorable members, I don't think it would apply here. We can raise that again somewhere else. If you were charged in the context of this particular offence and the document wasn't properly classified, that obviously would be a defence. You don't need to write it into the law. The defence would be this unclassified document in terms of the act. You can't find me guilty, that would be your defence. Why do you want to say what is the obvious? Because the offence relates to the thing having to be classified. If it was never classified or it was never classified correctly, that appeal
of defense.
Yes,
correct, Chair. In addition to that, we've already made provision whereby you can approach the classifying authority and make that very point. say this document shouldn't be classified. Remember, we said a requester may approach the classifying authority to have information declassified, or in the event that a person is in possession of a document and says it shouldn't have been classified, top secret. So it's not just the erroneous classification. But you're quite correct, Chairman. I don't think we need to provide it here. It's self-evident.
So, Chairman, with all the due respect, it's not. And I agree that this might not be the place. Since there is no specific place, I raised it here just as a continuity of subject matter. But as it stands, this. Yes, one can ask for a reclassification. But if one doesn't ask for the reclassification and discloses a document which is classified, that's not the point. The point is that one discloses a document which should have not been classified, and by virtue of that fact, that person goes to jail because it has been disclosed a document which was classified. He could have asked for a declassification, but he should have not been classified. Let me give you a more tangent example. A document which blatantly reveals corruption. It should have not been classified. Somebody discloses it. It should be able to use as a defense that the document should have not been classified. Otherwise, a person goes to jail for yes, it does. If you look at articles at the section, it's very clear. Yes, it is an offense for the guy who classifies it. Well, courts apply what we ask them to do. So if that's your intention, and I appreciate it being your intention, you put it very clearly in your document, let us make our intention clear. This is because, again, we're putting people in jail. Nobody wants to put in jail somebody for having disclosed something which should have not been classified in terms of the act. It takes one line to eliminate all the doubts. It is very possible that there might be a judge as stupid as I am out there. Unlikely, but possible. So let's tell him that one is entitled to use as an exculpatory defense the improper classification.
Honorable members, that matter will stand over. Stand over. If you understand the criminal procedure, then you will understand that when you are charged, there's all sorts of things that you should do. You should request further particulars, and even ask when was this document classified, who classified it, and because you know a lot about the act, so you'll be able to defend those people. And by the time you've asked all the questions that you're entitled to ask in terms of the criminal procedure act, you will come out by the answer that you are trying to put into the law. No, the issue is you want to include it as a defense here. And I'm saying let it stand over because we're not going to agree on it here. People that are having difficulty understanding the thing, and I don't think it's going to take us any further to argue about it now. So let's spark it, and you can raise it again when we come to the offenses issue that this is something that you think should be included. Okay, I'm going to remember. Can we proceed then?
Thank you, Chairperson. On the regulation section, clause 48, page 83 onwards, Chairperson. And I'm specifically referring there to subclause 3, 4, and 5, and then there's an alternative on subclause 3, 4, and 5. Chairperson, that is the making of the regulation and the requirement that the minister must consult the Minister must consult with the Minister of Arts and Culture. What is done in the first one, as on page 83, clause subclause 3, is we've identified in subclause 3 the sections or the necessary paragraphs in subclause 1 where we feel that the Minister maybe must consult with the Minister of Arts and Culture, and we listed it as 48.1 A, B, C and E of this Act, and then the regulations must be published for comment. The decision was that thereafter it must be tabled in Parliament for approval before publication in the Gazette, and then subsequent to that it was also indicated that any regulation made under subsection 1 may prescribe penalties of a fine or of imprisonment for a period not exceeding 3 years for any contravention thereof or failure to comply therewith. Unfortunately, the one at the top on page 84, that subclause 5, didn't come out precisely, but it's captured in the middle of the page, the subclause 5. The alternative proposal on that is that the Minister, and I'm at page 84, subclause 3 there, the Minister, subject to the National Archives and Records Services of South Africa Act, and after consultation with the Minister of Arts and Culture, may make regulations regarding, and then we list the areas, protection, transfer, destruction, or alteration of valuable information, and must publish the draft regulation for public comment. And then subclause 4 reads, then any draft regulations made under this section must be tabled in Parliament for approval at least 30 days before the regulations are promulgated. So there are just a few variants on the particular proposals that we thought maybe the committee might consider.
All the members. What one would you like? When you say
the important thing is it's got to come to Parliament so we can give these offences a lot.
Second one, honourable members? Not a difficult choice, this. The second one. And the second one we'll add will retain 5. So then from page 83, that 3 is going to be removed. Am I correct? And we will, and the paragraph on top of 84 will be removed with the or. And bracket 3 on 84 will then move up to follow. Now where's bracket 2? Oh, bracket 2 is there. Understood, honourable members? Agreed to. Next, honourable members? Honourable members?
I'm sorry, there was another point, and I don't want to engender a sense of annoyance when I raise points. I promise that. Be much better off staying at home with my wife. But these are matters of importance. I appreciate we are all tired. There was a point that I raised in respect of 46, and you said, Mr. Chairman, that the law advisors were looking into it. And that is 46, I see that nothing has been done about it. 46.6, a classification authority or the director general of the agency, if the case may be, in consultation with the minister, must declassify the information required in legal proceedings. It's very important. If there is information there that proves that you're innocent, that must be declassified. Then there is a proviso. Unless it is strictly necessary to maintain the classification in terms of this act. So in terms of the proviso, if somebody tells you it is strictly necessary, you can send an innocent man to jail because the information which proves his innocence will remain classified and secret. And they say this is a test of civility, whether the state is more important than the individual and the individual is important, more important than the state and his secrets. And I remember, Mr. Chairman, that said, provided that any information capable of being used as a defense in criminal proceedings must be declassified. That was my addition. Because where it refers to legal proceedings in 6, maybe legal, maybe criminal, or maybe civil. So at least in respect of criminal proceedings, the proviso that is strictly necessary to maintain the classification as a matter of civility, I submit, cannot apply. I raised the point, you said that the state law advisors were going to look into it, and I am reproposing, if we want to carry it over, I just wish it to be given the due consideration it deserves.
Honourable Member, I don't know. If you are talking about 46 sub-bracket 6, I don't recall telling you that I have asked the state law advisors to...
Well, you remember my having raised my this point, almost in the same words as I'm doing now. And you remember, there wasn't a discussion, and it was said that we'll look into it, the state law advisors will look into it. So it was left in abeyance. We didn't discuss, there was no agreement, because there was no discussion. But the issue is that in terms of this provision, an innocent man can go to jail. It refers to legal proceedings, which are either civil proceedings or criminal proceedings. So my suggestion, at least in respect of criminal proceedings, the proviso be added as set out in IFP 2, the document IFP 2, which reads, provided that any information capable of being used as a defense in criminal proceedings must be declassified. I think that that's something that each of us would want if we were in that position. And if somebody of us would wish to go to jail innocent to keep state secret, I'd like to know who that person is.
Honourable members, this is taking us back. It should have been raised when we go forward. Is Honourable Smuts?
I have no particular recollection on the points of this. All I want to ask is the following. I tabled and, in fact, gave you my own personal copy of Dario Milo's formulation for this entire section, not just one subclause thereof, but the entire clause. And I was just wondering, two questions, whether, assuming that you haven't had a chance to look at it yet, whether you might want to add that in as an option in the consolidated draft. And secondly, you kindly furnished copies of sections 153 and 154 of the CPA. Which I've perused, and I see no conflict between the standing sections from the CPA in respect of criminal matters and Dario Milo's draft. So I thought perhaps you would just want to tell us why you gave us copies of the CPA sections. And secondly, might we not include that alternative as an option?
Page 80 of your working document. Bracket 7 is reference to section 154 of the Criminal Procedures Act, which I gave you. But if you look at the Criminal Procedures Act 154, it makes a reference to 153. So I gave you both, so that you didn't have to go in the case of convenience, so that you didn't have to cross it.
Okay. And wasn't it pleasing, by the way, to see that 153 is so spot on, in the sense that it draws its reference to the interest of the security of the state, almost directly from the ICCPR. It includes good order of public morals. But there is no conflict between this, and thank you very much then for the convenience.
Honourable members, you are requested to look at the You are requested, honourable members, you are requested to look at the document of Dario, Mr. Dario, Dr. Dario Milo, and you are to come to conclusions, and it is meant to assist you. If you find favorable wording, where you you use that as your proposals and put it down as proposals, and we will then deal with that when we get there. Can we then look at where we are now, Ms. Poisson?
Chairperson, on clause 49, that is page 84 to 85 of the working document, we also have a handout on that.
Yes, we have the documents now, Ms. Poisson.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Just tell us which one you are dealing with.
Thank you, Chairperson. 49.1 at the top of the handout deals with the first clause that we were asked to insert the words reasonable. That relates to the previous clause 48, where we've removed the time period in subclause 2 and we indicated reasonable period there, so that's just also to make provision there for. Chairperson, then there was a proposal that we need to just maybe have a look at the saving of classified information, so we've drafted there as a proposal. Any information classified under previous classification legislation or any other law remains in force until the commencement of this act. But subsequently, we've discussed this matter this morning, so we will draft a new formulation on that particular provision in accordance with the discussions of this morning. Chairperson, then on clause 49, we were also asked to look at inserting where there's a review, what happens thereafter. The declassification processes and so forth. So that is what subclauses 3 and 4 relate to. So subclause 3 will then read, and that is new, it's not in the bill. In conducting a review in terms of section 49.2, the relevant head of the organ of state concerned or the agency, as the case may be, must apply the conditions for classification and declassification in section 17.2, A, declassify the classified information, or B, reclassify the classified information. Subclause 4, the head of an organ of state concerned or the agency, as the case may be, must, in accordance with section 26, transfer the declassified information contemplated in subsection 3B to the relevant archive.
And this two additional clauses was in relation to?
That relates to subclause, the old subclause 2 that now becomes 3, where we've got the review of the information under MIS, the Protection of Information Act, and what happens thereafter after the review has been conducted by the head of organ of state or agency.
The Honourable Landers and the Honourable Abrasini, then the Honourable
Chair, yes, you'll recall that I think it was yesterday, I made the point that 49 sub 2 correctly provides that the old information that's being classified must be reviewed, that an audit report must be compiled by the head of the organ of state concern, it says the same of the agency, and that they must submit reports to the classification review panel. The
point I made was, well, if you conduct the review and then you do the audit and you submit your report, then what happens to the classified information? Something has to happen. Either the information must be declassified or reclassified. And what the drafters have put here in this is to do precisely that. So it's declassified, it's reclassified, and then if it's declassified, it's sent to the archives in terms of Clause 26.
Chairman? Yeah, subject to the new redraft of the saving provision, I'm happy with it. Just a minor amendment under 49.3. I think we should add a C to read confirm the classification of the classified information. As you wish. Of the classified information. I don't think it's necessary. I mean, we can't define the obvious.
Members, you will recall I did tell the state law advisor to look at that. Whether the classification. Now, are we in agreement that this confirmation process is going to be A, and then the declassification process is B, and this reclassification is C? It be or, and the last one won't have a or. Am I correct, Honourable Members? And otherwise, you find favour with these, and then you have something. Sorry, it's what you wanted to be heard. Sorry, Honourable.
No, thank you for that. Just 49.1 correctly reflects what we've instructed the law advisors, but it just seems strange to say a reasonable period which occurs first. Normally that phrase refers to a specific time period, but it's not a major issue. The second issue relating to savings of classified information, does that tie in with the earlier formulation where we put in 49.2? Any information classified under any previous law or MIS guidelines shall remain classified, subject to this Act, notwithstanding the repeal of such Act. Now we're saying here, any remains in force. We just need to make sure those two clauses tie in. I'm not saying necessarily that they conflict with each other. Firstly, consistency of language, and secondly, just to check. Again, it will be easier once we've seen all the transitional provisions, whether they read correctly or whether there's no conflict between the two. It might be between that A and the two that we inserted. Otherwise, I'm satisfied.
Do you want to comment, Ms. Boyd?
Just to reiterate that the saving of classified information will be redrafted in accordance with our discussion this morning. So it will reflect what we've discussed this morning. This was just a formulation that we did for discussion purposes.
And Honourable Swart, the word reasonable was added because the specific time periods was on the Honourable Abrasini's suggestion might cause a problem, and we added the word reasonable. It was given some thought. If you're going to start adding the time period now, you're going to
your advisor will then incorporate this into the document that's going to be circulated to the honorable members. Is there anything else, I suppose?
I guess that's what we asked to comment on today.
Honorable members, can I go then to the Honorable Abrasini, who I have offered 7 minutes or less, whichever comes first? Honorable Abrasini, you have 7 minutes in which to address us on your public domain defense. 7 minutes. And it is now 25 to 6 on my watch. I will stop you after 7 minutes. You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I could not be at the worst time. Everyone is very tired now, and I don't think anyone wants to hear about something new. But, so I would plead you, please, listen with an open heart. It is a real issue. I've spoken about the public domain defense before. Take the example of the NEL classifying, or the Department of Defense classifying aspect about our missiles. Classified top secret, it falls within the definition of that which should be classified. And that is a comparison between our missiles and the missiles of Brazil. Take the situation in which Brazil publishes the same document and is retrievable on the internet. Should one go to jail? We obviously agree that we shouldn't. There was a public defense, public domain defense in our bill. It was in respect of commercial secret. We have taken that clause out. It's no longer there. It should be reinserted in respect of any information. When something leaves the box where it gets secret, when something leaves the safe, a secret can no longer be regarded as a secret. There are open secrets which have been classified, that are spoken about, that have been published in newspaper. The fact that people speak about the possession of that information cannot be the basis on which people go to jail. And let us remind ourselves that we are not talking about documents. This is about information. And when the information itself is in the mind of people and is talked about, it must be deemed in the public domain. Do we need something specifically written in that? Yes. At what point is in the public domain? I gave you the last time in which I addressed you a sequence of events. If you read a secret from a newspaper, you, the reader, obviously cannot be criminalized. What about the person who published it? The typist, the editor, anyone in the process. Technically speaking, in terms of the bill we are passing, anyone in the chain who receives the information and it discloses further is guilty of an offense. The person who receives the information, the one who gives it to the typist who gives it to the secretary who gives it to the editor who gives it to the other colleagues to discuss it in the meeting of editors, and everyone else until it makes the newspaper. It can't be. We do agree that the reader cannot be criminalized, but so no one else in the process. The only reasonable exception, the only reasonable thing, is that when something is in the public domain, is accessed and accessible by people who have no obligation to keep it secret, that information must be the further disclosure, the further disclosure of that information cannot constitute the basis for criminal sanctions. I've given you a one-liner language to be inserted. I will read it, but that's all that is required. It's a matter of absolute importance. Otherwise, we're going to deal with a range of unintended consequences, which is not our intention. Just trying to do something to capture our intention is different from the public defense, public interest defense. There we make somebody non-guilty, while he should be guilty, because what he did was in the public interest. Here we are dealing with just enabling something which is in the public, in the public domain, to be spoken about, to be divulged further, without bringing people to jail for effectively divulging what is already been divulged and has left the secret in which it was supposed to be kept. I will read you my language, and I'm sure that from the language itself you will see that it is reasonable. And when I don't speak, the time doesn't run. Which, any information, and I'm reading something that I already sent to you, so I'm doing you a favor. Any information which falls within the public domain or is disclosed in a manner which can make such information accessible by person other than those authorized to access it shall be deemed no longer classified or classifiable in terms of this act, saving respect of who, of he or she who first caused such information to become a public domain or so disclosed. You can't put back the genie into the bottle. Once something is in the public domain, it's in the newspapers, it's openly and easily and readily accessible, you cannot classify it again. If you can Google it on the internet, if the Brazilians have published it, you should be able to publish it, even if the NEL keeps it secret. Otherwise, we're going to put people in jail for information which can be otherwise obtained from Google. It is not your intention. It is a problem with the bill. The language I'm suggesting will correct that and bring the legislative text closer to the legislative intention.
Time is up, Honourable Member, and your proposal has been received. Honourable Member, the Honourable Abrasini was kind enough to circulate me. I don't know if he circulated to you also a copy of what he just read. Perhaps he would be kind enough to circulate it to you too. I would suggest that you read this thing. Give it some thought, because it is one of those double-edged swords. The argument's not as sound as it sounds. You will, I think, after reading it carefully, looking at what it is that he's proposing, you will find considerable matters there for discussion. I don't want to criticize it unnecessarily, Honourable Member, for fear I might be influencing people and you might then accuse me of trying to influence people either way. So I think you just need to look at it, Honourable Members, and see what it is that you like about it or what it is that you don't like about it. I would just want to put to the Honourable Member a question which might assist me in understanding this thing a bit better. And the question is, Honourable Member, is it possible for someone to own this information that you are talking about? Can this information have an owner? Like, I am the owner of my motor car or of my watch. Can I be the owner of this information?
The term, the issue is not one of ownership, it's the one of accessibility. If the information is accessible easily and readily by people who are not entitled to access it under the law, that's not a secret. And again, it's never the document that we're talking about, it's the information. If you can retrieve that information from a different source, then it's in the public domain. The public domain exemption was there for commercial information, and we took it out. It's the same rationale. Once it's in the open, it's in the open.
Can I ask you another question? Your inability to answer my first question, am I to read anything into it? I say your inability to answer my
question. But what was the first question?
The first question was where information, the information that you're referring to in your clause 2 in the document you emailed me, that information. Can one own it? Can somebody own it?
No,
it's like I own my watch.
Yeah, I answered
answer
it.
Be,
I answered.
Your answer was it doesn't apply. I'm just.
No, I said the taste is not ownership.
Yeah,
it's not relevant. It's an issue of accessibility.
But the simple question is can one? I mean, it might not be relevant here. I'm just asking because I need to understand what you're trying to say. It will help me. You might not think my question is relevant.
Okay,
but if you think, if you don't want to answer.
It's not that I don't want to answer. Information is a chattel in position. And as such can be owned like anything else. Wrong terminology, but it's it does have an owner. The owner is not necessarily the only entity which can access it. The regulations will determine who can access it. It could be a national intelligence piece of information which can be accessed by other organs of state. Or it could be a police information which can be accessed by any other organ state. Or it could be a parastatal information, the nails information, which can be accessed by other organ state.
So in principle, this information can be owned. Now I'm clear. It will help me. I work through this. That's all. Yes, I'm aware.
I think that you use your own description of being naughty in your place. But I just want to ask you, the subject is too important to dispose of tonight since we're all for now completely exhausted. But may I ask Mario just to tell me what he understands the current legal position to be as opposed to what he's just read? Is there a difference? Secondly, does he consider the statement made by Judge Moseneke in the independent new judgment, Masetla trial within a trial? Does he consider that authoritative on the issue? Or was it not truly a constitutional issue? So A, what is the legal position in his understanding? How does it differ from what he's proposing? B, the Dikang dictum, does that hold?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I assume that what the Honorable Smart is referring to would be the legal position created by this piece of legislation without this clause, or the legal position prior to this piece of legislation. Well, to the extent that anything is classified, and that goes into the big issue, to the extent that anything is classified, disclosing a piece of information which has fallen to the public domain could trigger criminal sanction. So in respect of the present position, I will tell you I'm not clear and the situation is not clear. In respect of the legal position which we would be creating with this bill without this clause, I can tell you with a greater measure of certainty that people could be prosecuted and it will leave a chilling effect on the base. In respect of the constitutionality of this consequence, I think I don't like to judge issues of constitutionality on the basis of what can be said in a dictum. There is, judges say things as they reach a conclusion and then they apply their mind to a concrete case and they reach a different type of conclusion. But what I do know, doing a job here, in adherence to my oath of office, is that I want to make sure that this thing is not unconstitutional. I don't want to rely on the fact that we make a mistake and that somebody will take it to the Constitutional Court and the Constitutional Court will fix it. And beyond the aspect of constitutionality, there is an aspect of what's right and what's wrong. Even if it is not unconstitutional, it would remain in my eyes wrong for anyone to be convicted on a formal basis because it did not respect the formal classification when that which the formality was aimed at protecting has already been lost. The cows have left the barns and we close the door afterwards. It is public. So we need to make, that's our intention. Let's make it clear.
Honorable sir?
We on record as supporting Dr. Massini's argument, we will look at these particular words, but the issue of public domain is already addressed in PIA as well. There we've got mandatory protection under very constrained circumstances, such as 34, which is your mandatory protection of the privacy of a third party. We've got 36, mandatory protection of the commercial information, and that's possibly why we inserted it and then removed the commercial information. And we've got 37, which is the mandatory protection of certain confidential information. In each case, the information officer must refuse access except where it is already publicly available. And I just ask us to bear that in mind when we consider the feasibility of a public domain defense. Thank you, Jim.
I just think that Dr. Ambrosini, as the person who now rightly introduces, should at least read the independent newspaper judgment to try to summarize, and I hope I don't misrepresent what Judge Mosaneke said that was that. A classified document can't lose its classification just for the fact that it has been released into the public domain, because then anybody could use the excuse of unauthorized release in order to achieve. So I don't like that judgment. Therefore, it is to me very interesting to establish authoritatively to what degree that binds us and what kind of appointments. So you should do the homework, Mario, and then we can do the discussion. Because I would like to achieve public domain or classified information.
I would like to remind you that when we had the presentation from Mr. Dlomo there on the international best practices and a whole range of things, one of the things that we had in fact asked him to look at was this very issue of public domain defense. You can find it in your documents. And if you look there, you will find that in different jurisdictions they deal with it in different ways. There's only two ways they really deal with it. One is that they take note of it, the other one is that they don't. The Mosaneke one says the fact that it's landed up in the public domain does not ipso facto, by the very fact, mean that it is declassified. And one might argue that that's a common sense approach, because the bill says the thing cannot be declassified until the person that is classified has declassified it, or one of these other things apply. So I don't want to interrupt you any further. I did offer the Abusini the time. He had the time, I think he's addressed you. At the end of the day, you will make up your mind whether this thing needs to be included. Then we will look at that and we will conclude the way forward on your members. Now, I need to make... I was going to say for good behavior, I was going to say something nice, but it seems now that behavior is deteriorating. Let's just watch it next time. Honourable members, it is now 5 to 6, and within the powers invested in me, I think that you're all looking pretty miserable. I think it's because you've got your eyes set on this long weekend. And I see very little cooperation coming out of you. I've been trying to flog you with very little results. So, honourable members, I have arranged for an early dinner at 6. You may go for dinner now at 6, and we will adjourn and we will not come back after 6.
The chairman,
I will then see you on Wednesday
right next door. I will then see you on Wednesday next week after justice has met in the afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, you are said which in constitutional law is often spoken of, but rarely seen, a benevolent dictator.
I've been a pianist in my life, but that's one of the things as well. You even do the chimney.